But what did you expect to find?
An answer.
That's not crazy, is it?
How come I know so much? What the hell is going on around here? Who the hell are you people?
Hello. Why did she leave me? Why did she get over me so quick? She's with a new guy already. I don't understand it. Today we're going to get into the War Brides dynamic on a Friday edition of The Rational Male. We go. How we doing? How we doing, gentlemen? Yeah, that was my new intro. I hope you guys like that. Let's throw this up there today. How's that? We will broadcast book four. Why did your girlfriend leave you? Why did she leave you? And how did she get over you so damn quickly? That's what we hope to answer today. I have done several essays about the War Brides dynamic, and it's something that I think needs a little bit better explaining. There are a lot of guys right now who are sort of coming into this space, coming into the manosphere, coming into the red pill, and they allude to the reasons or the I guess the concept of war brides, but they don't really comprehensively discuss it. And I have, like I said, I've talked about this for quite some time. When I was a moderator on So Suave, I talked about this quite a bit. One of the most common questions, anyways, you know, usually we get these, you know, the same kind of questions over and over again from guys, you know, how do I get my girlfriend back? How do I get frame? How do I recapture frame? That kind of stuff. Well, one of those questions, very common question was, Rollo, my girlfriend left me, now she's with another guy, and I can't stand the thought of her being with this other guy, right? I see it in my dreams, and it's just like it's driving me insane. And I mean, literally, they have like a I don't want to say PTSD, but they certainly have some sort of like very deep psychological like pain from the, even just the thought, like the imagining, right? Because they had invested so much into that relationship, and now. I mean, it depends on how long, of course, it had gone on. A lot of guys will tend to overinvest in a relationship who end up later on, once they've sort of broken up with that girl. This is a common kind of side effect, I think, as far as their detoxing from that girl goes. And it really literally is detoxing in some cases. It's a physical, like almost an endorphin, I don't say dopamine, but it's an endorphin rush that you get from like the initial sort of feelings of, you know, I want to get with this girl, I want to have sex with this girl. It's like that infatuation actually has a chemical signature for it. So guys have a really tough time getting over that. At some point, I think I will probably end up doing a full show on detox. However, there's that side of the story. And then there's the other side of the story, which is, well, why is it so common for guys to have this problem, right? Why is it that so many guys talk about how quickly their girlfriend went from being very intimate with them, like almost to the point where they were like engaged or they were going to get married or they thought they were, to she never knew ye, right? She's sitting across the divorce table and she has no idea who you are. Or perhaps she is your girlfriend and then suddenly she ghosts you and now you see she's, you know, with, I don't know, NBA players doing yacht parties in Miami or something like that, right? She turns into somebody different. She turns into someone you never knew that she could possibly be. So that's one thing. The other side of this is I think that a lot of guys misunderstand, they misread the signs. When their time is up, we've talked about this before. You know, it's she was never yours. It's just your turn. Okay, that's not today's show. I've done that before with Ryan. We'll get to that at some point along the way, but that's sort of the pragmatic way of thinking about it. But why do we have to think about it that way? Why do we come to that? Well, that kind of rewinds us back to what I've sort of termed the war brides dynamic. And how that's something that's out of my first book. And it's something that we were talking about way back in the days of So Suave, back in the early 2000s, because we kept getting this question all the time, right? Well, how can she go from being like very familiar and very intimate with me to being like a total stranger? And now she's with this guy and she seems like she's known this guy her entire life. Well, we're going to have to rewind the tape here and go back into sort of an evolutionary history to figure those things out. So first and foremost, when I talk about the war brides dynamic, it is not just about breakups, but it is also about sort of women's nature when it comes to their mating strategy and when it comes to hypergamy. Okay, so for hypergamy, we're talking about alpha seed and beta need, and that's the nice way of saying AFBB, and you know what that stands for. But how did that evolve? How did that happen? Why is it that women have tend to be more susceptible, let's just say, to things like Stockholm syndrome, which is sort of falling in love with your captor? Well, we have to go back to our ancestral past, and we have to look at how human beings lived prior to our agriculture, and when we lived as, like, well, prior to that, of course, we were tribal gatherers, right? But hunter-gatherer tribes. And in pretty much all across human history, it has gone something like this. One tribe invades another tribe, kills off all the menfolk, kills off all the boys, and takes all of the women as spoils of war, because women have an inherent value. They are the incubators of the next generation. So what happens is one dominant tribe comes in, wipes out another tribe, kills off all the men, and takes all the women for themselves, and then integrates them into their gatherer, their berry pickers, right? Their gatherer women, and breeds with those women, because those women are valuable, because they can spread the genetic legacy of the guys who were the conquerors, right? So now, as brutal as that sounds, that's simply the history of pretty much humankind for a very long time. So it's not just Vikings coming down, you know, the northern coast and you know, raiding villages. I mean, this is like something that has happened even in like Pacific Asian cultures, where the tribesmen will go over to different islands and just to raid the women, steal the women and take them back to their island, and then, you know, have them as war brides. And that's really what it boils down to. And so as a result of that, women being the more vulnerable sex in terms of strength, certainly in terms of defenselessness, in terms of having to be the generators of the next generation, of course, the reproductive investment costs that are associated with women and, you know, bearing children, carrying a child to term, and then being effectively helpless for pretty much that whole time while she is pregnant. And then again, raising that child in some way, either as a collective or as a single, you know, person, you know, a mother of that child, until that child reaches self-sufficiency. And you can argue as to when that age happens, but let's just say maybe 8 to 10 years old when that kid can fend for itself. So there's a lot of vulnerability. There's a lot of, need for protection. There's a lot of need for, investing in the right guy, of course. Now, back in our ancestral past, when we lived in a more, let's say, brutal patriarchy, what women were subjected to at that time affected the psychology of women and their nature in today's time. So when a woman gets over you really quick, or she seems to want to get on as quickly as possible with another guy, there's a reason for that. And there's an evolutionary reason for that. So what happens then is, if you are, let's just say, for, you know, imagine yourself right now, you are one of these women who was taken as a spoil of war, as a war bride, and you've been taken from your tribe, your husband and your mated pair, father of your children is now dead. All of your children are now dead, except for maybe the younger girls aren't. And you have been captured and taken and I mean this in general terms. I don't mean this in literal terms. Like, you're taken to a new country. You're taken to a new land. You're taken to a new tribe. You're taken from what you knew into a new social situation that you don't know. And so you have two choices at that point. You can either put up a fight and most likely die. be devoted to your at your now dead husband and your now dead sons, and you can die yourself. That's choice number one. Choice number two is to get along as best that you can, which is fall in love with your captor. Find some way to rationalize why you are now with a superior tribesman or whoever it is, whoever you've been sort of passed off to, and form some kind of psychological defense mechanisms that encourage that, or in some way adapt survival-wise to that new situation. So now you've got the women who do survive, who have that capacity to, let's just say, have a propensity for Stockholm syndrome, have a propensity for being able to sort of fall in love with their captors or become good war brides. And I mean that in the sort of pragmatic sense. It becomes a survival adaptation for them. How many children can a woman during that time, during our hunter-gatherer days, how many children could that woman effectively have at that time, and then risk death each time she was impregnated and she had to carry a child to term? So when you look at the sort of the pragmatics, the logistics of the whole thing, it makes sense that nature, that evolution would select for women who have a capacity to either fall in love with their captors or to get along with a new guy as quick as possible. There is also a parallel to this, I guess, in the animal kingdom. So in lions and other higher order mammals, when a rival alpha comes in and kills off the resident alpha right there, he proceeds to kill off all of the offspring of that lion or of that silverback gorilla, right? Comes in, deposes the existing alpha, kills him off or drives him off, and then the first order of business is to kill off all of his offspring. This is infanticide. This is very common in the animal kingdom. And what that does is it has the effect of sending all of the previous alpha's harem of females into estrus. And that is an ugly aspect of evolution and life and as it is, but it's simply something that happens. And we see similarities, let's just say, in human cultures as well. We can go back to the Old Testament even, or, and it doesn't have to necessarily be sort of Abrahamic religions. I'm just using this because this is what everybody's familiar with. But there are passages in the Old Testament where God himself says, go in, kill off every man and boy and everyone in this tribe, but take the fertile age women for yourselves. And that's part of the culture at that time. Now, again, as I said before, there are other cultures. This happens in all across the world, from Native Americans to Eastern Europeans, Western Europeans, Pacific Islanders, Asia, you name it. And this has been sort of the operative, the MO for men and women for a very long time. So how does that affect an evolved mental firmware in women? Well, it effectively makes it so that women are at they are more advantageous if they can adapt to that new environment. Because if they don't, then they don't send on their genetics into the next generation. So it would stand to reason that women who had the capacity to form rationalizations to deal with cognitive dissonance, the cognitive dissonance that comes from the idea that, well, now my husband is dead and now my sons are dead. Now I've got to either die myself or I have to be with this new man in this new tribe and go along to get along. So there is that aspect that I think is still a vestige that is a part of women's reproductive strategies right now. So when that woman decides to dump you and get with another guy, she gets along with that guy a whole lot easier as a result of that evolved mental firmware. Now, that's aspect number one of the war brides dynamic, okay? So women are the vulnerable sex. The war brides dynamic is, of course, a survival adaptation. And then you also have to think about women's innate solipsism. That is a result of millennia of exactly that situation where women had to, put up with what they had to put up with at that time. So there is that. Now, and the other part that I want to also kind of throw in here is cognitive dissonance, because I've mentioned this before. I think I mentioned this with Pat Campbell a while ago, is a lot of guys will say, well, how can women say that they will, like, you know, why is it that women will, break rules for alphas and make rules for betas? Very similar to the war brides dynamic. Because the more alpha the guy is, the better the opportunity that guy represents. Now, in our ancestral past, the alpha male might have been the guy who was the biggest and baddest and had the capacity for violence and also had the capacity for protection, for provisioning, and was a good, at least, prospect for parental investment of his own kids, assuming he could maintain the tribe and maintain his position in that tribe and defend that tribe and defend her. So that became part of the sexual selection process, at least in the ancestral past sense. So you've got that right there. Now, the other thing is, Ed, I had to throw this in there because you'll notice that in the title, or at least in the thumbnail here, I said widows and war brides. And this seems like it counteracts or it contradicts the idea of the alpha widow. So how does the alpha widow fit in to the war brides dynamic? And it's very simple as this, is that the higher the value the guy is, the easier that cognitive dissonance is to settle. So we've all heard of the ride or die woman. That's the woman who is so well invested in that guy, in that alpha male, her previous alpha, that even if he were to die, she will go down with the ship too. That's the ride, literally the ride or die girl. And so the greater the alpha impact that that man had on her and perhaps the family that she developed with him, even if that family ends up being killed and taken over by a superior tribe, she's still willing to go down with the ship. She's still willing to, like I said, ride or die. So there is that aspect of it, but you also have to remember this, and I will get into this in another video very soon, is that the alpha impact is really key to understanding the alpha widow's side of things. Why is it that a woman pines for a guy in her sexual past when she's with the guy who is the beta male? Well, it plays out like this. When it comes to the war brides dynamic, if that guy that is with her is not the optimal, is not the guy who is her hypergamous best situation, she's going to pine for the guy who she thinks was, or the fantasy of the guy that she thinks was. And so what happens then is you've got this perpetuation, I guess, of this ideal of answering what comes out to be the hypergamous doubt, which is he the best that I can do? If you are not the best that she can do, and it doesn't matter whether that's practical, it's reality, it's the perception. If the perception is that she can do better than you, that makes it that much easier for her to get over you. That's easy. That's just A plus B equals C kind of logic right there. But it's true. So if a woman had a much easier time getting over you as sort of the ex-boyfriend, or ghosts you, or just simply, like, you know, pretends like she never knew you, odds are that the guy that she wanted to get with, or the guy that she thought was the better prospect, had something on you, had something above and beyond you. And again, hypergamy is not a straitjacket, but that's the perception in this case. So yes, war brides and alpha widows can coexist in the same woman. Okay. So when we're talking about, like, cognitive dissonance, whenever women balance cognitive dissonance, it's usually as a result of one of those competing ideas that's creating that cognitive dissonance is going to be the one that best optimizes hypergamy in the long term, or at least by her own perception is going to be the one that is the best choice for her, depending on the position, depending on where she is at that stage of maturity in her life at that time. So maybe that's good news and maybe that's bad news for you. But the fact remains is that it's much easier for a woman to get over a guy who her kind of subconscious estimates as being a beta male. It's like, I can do better than this guy. And she tries to do that. That's why it becomes that much easier for her. Now, last but not least, and I'm going to get to this in an upcoming video here very soon. But why is it that that women can move on so quickly? There's like a speed to it. There's a quickness to it. And the short answer for this is that hypergamy cannot afford to miss out on a good opportunity. So when a woman is planning to leave you, right? It's usually the decision to leave a guy usually happens right about 6 months prior to maybe even more than that, maybe even 8 months prior. Like leaving you ends up becoming a formality. And that's when she hits the gym. And that's when guys, you know, a lot of guys sort of miss the cues at that time. They think that, oh, well, she's getting in shape for me or whatever. No, she's not getting in shape for you. She's getting in shape because she's already made the decision in the back of her mind that she is going to re-enter into the sexual marketplace. And she needs to be prepared for that. And on some level of consciousness, she realizes that she better damn well look good or she's not going to have a chance with the guy that she thinks she should have a chance with, because anybody's better than you or that guy's better than you. And a lot of guys just, they miss the cues or they don't want to believe, they'll try to find ways to rationalize it, or, well, you know, she's her own person and she's independent and we're all, you know, egalitarian and equal partners and all this other stuff. And guys will make up any number of excuses. But the fact remains is that when women split with a guy, it's not usually something that's instantaneous, particularly if they've been with that guy for a while. It's something that they plan ahead for. And so they've got to go find a way to, happens long. She breaks up with you long before she files the divorce papers with you. So at that point that she is, and you think you've been blindsided, she doesn't understand why you think you've been blindsided. Because she has, you know, subconsciously been planning this for quite some time. So to her, it's just a formality. To you, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe she moved on so quick. No, she moved on while she was still with you. And so that's why when I'm talking about like things like war brides or something like that, guys get really kind of lost in the weeds when it comes to, well, you know, it's her, she's an alpha widow. She, you know, she wants something she thinks she can have, but she can't really have. The grass is always greener, you know, eat, pray, love, that kind of stuff, or the divorce porn narrative and things that go along with that as well. But what they rationalize away for themselves is guys, what guys rationalize away for themselves is that the decision to leave you was made months prior to her quote unquote blindsiding you. So it's not so much a quick hit thing as it is a formality. It's just like, oh, I got to leave him now kind of thing. And now's the time and this is what I'm going to do. And so right at that point, usually that woman has reinserted herself back into the sexual marketplace. She's out there with her friends. She's doing girls' night out again. And suddenly it seems as if she never knew you. And that's kind of tough for guys who are really invested in what I've termed the fallacy of relational equity, meaning I put all of this time and all of this energy and all of this effort into the relationship, and I thought it was going to be some kind of insurance policy against her doing exactly what she's doing right now. Right? I took the kids to soccer practice. I went to every, you know, piano recital. I read with them when they were kids and I did homework with them and, you know, AB on down the list, thinking that that was going to in some way solidify or strengthen the marriage or the relationship, when in fact she's already checked out of the relationship while you're doing that. So that's why it seems like it's happening a lot faster than it actually is. So that's the first part. The second part is that she has an incentive to do so. And that's where all of this comes down to is hypergamy has a window of opportunity that is very short when you look at women's timeline here. So I'm going to throw this up really quickly here. This is my infamous sexual market value graph grid, whatever you want to call it, from way back in like 2013, 2014. You'll see this all over the internet and people will use this and they'll either love it or they'll hate it or whatever. But I usually peg women's sexual market value peak years right around 23 years old. And you can see that peak span year, but it's anywhere between 15 and 16 years. And for women, it tends to hit at 23, and then it's on a steady decline, as you can see right there, until right about 30. 29 to 31 is where I peg the epiphany phase, as you know. Anybody who's been following my blog long enough knows what that is. And so when you're looking at that window of opportunity for women, put this back. When you look at that window of opportunity for women between, say, 18 and 28, and I'm being generous, let's just say 18 and 28, that's a 10-year span in a lifetime for a woman that might, you know, hope you live a long life, you know, might be 90 years. So 10 of the 90 years that a woman spends on planet Earth, she's going to be at her peak sexual market value agency. That's why she moves on quickly. That's why if your potential doesn't pan out, and I'm going to, like I said, I'm in another video, I will address this. But if your potential doesn't pan out, then that's why she moves on as fast as she can. because she knows that the time is short. She knows that the time is running out. The biological clock is ticking. Actually, the biological clock started ticking probably right when she was about 21 or 22 in all, you know, reality and logistically, but physically, you know, biological realities. But by the time she gets to be about 30, 31, 32, you know, carrying a child to term. So that's ancient compared to the women of our ancestral past. Women by that point had already had two or three kids just as far back as 100 years ago, maybe even 150 years ago. And so things were a whole lot different because, you know, societies were different, of course, but, and, you know, lifespans were different as well. But the urgency with which to find the guy who settles the hypergamous doubt question, is he the best I can do, is something that requires women to move as fast as possible. And any time spent on a guy who isn't that dude is time that she could have invested in a guy who was going to be the best guy that she could get with. Now, the problem, of course, right now in a gynocentric social order is that we think that women ought to be their sexual agency should be evergreen. It should just last for forever and forever, right? Sexy at any age, sexy at any size, whatever, you know, it's all social constructionism. And if we can convince enough women that that's the way things are, if we can convince enough guys that that's the way things are, then women maintain that sort of edge in the social power structure. Now, that is bad news, not only for women, but it's also bad news for guys as well, today anyway. So I'll dig into that a little bit in another video, an upcoming video here. So that is War Brides in a quick under 30 minute description here. So when I'm talking about, and just to sum things up, when I'm talking about War Brides, when you hear this, it's usually because guys are saying, well, you know, it's because of a breakup, or it's because if you want to know why there's a sense of urgency for women at different ages, like say like 28 to 31, why is that the epiphany phase? Well, we can go and rewind this all the way back to the War Brides dynamic. It's like she has to be able to find some way to rationalize for herself the cognitive dissonance that comes from the urgency that is necessary for her to solve her reproductive problem, find the guy who is the best hypergamous option for her at that time. Rich Cooper says this all the time. You know, women wait at the, women don't care about men's struggles. They wait at the finish line and they bang the winners. Well, the problem is most women can't figure out who the winners are when women are in their peak sexual market value years. And so therefore they have to make bets. And if they make a bad bet, they have to have social fail safes to get out of that, bad decision, that bad bet, that bad commitment, whatever it is. And in order to do that, there has to be psychological mechanisms that help them cope with the cognitive dissonance that is generated as a result of the urgency that she has between, say, age 18 and 28 years old. Now, that might even carry over later in life for women, and particularly now, but I'm using this as sort of like the roundabout decade, you know, 10-year span for women. If you want to argue that, oh, well, it goes all the way up to 38. Okay, fine. Well, there's 20 years, you know, but even then, a woman has to be in exceptional shape and in exceptional exceptional circumstances to be able to do something like that. Most women end up hitting the wall, and I mean wall psychologically, not physically. End up hitting the wall, could be physically, but end up hitting the wall sometime well before their 30s, particularly in Western societies right now. So those are just some things to think about. But when we wonder why women can be so, it seems like they're callous, and in some cases they might be. And they might not even be able to tell you why they feel the way that they are, because it is something that is under the surface. It's subconscious. It's part of, like I said, that evolved mental firmware. They don't know why they can say, well, I got with the hot guy in the foam cannon party on the same night lay that I got with him, but I would never do that for the guy who was a good dad or who had boyfriend material. And that creates a cognitive dissonance, and they'll even giggle and laugh about it, and they'll make, you know, hit romantic comedies about it. And open hypergamy right now and today in a gynocentric social order is something that's acceptable. We make commercials out of it right now. But really, the reason why we need that humor is because women recognize the cognitive dissonance between their actions and what they say. Oh, I need a nice guy. I need a swell guy. I need a guy who's you know, mature. I need this guy. But then they have a history from the time they were 18 till they were 28 of getting with the bad boy alphas that maybe Sheryl Sandberg had convinced them that that's what they needed to get and, you know, have their fun while they had the opportunity to do so. So those are some things to think about. But that is, like I said, the War Brides dynamic in a nutshell. And I hope you learned something from this. I've got another video coming up. It's going to be a quick hit video. I'm just going to do a quick video breakdown analysis, and it's going to be kind of a companion to this video. So watch for that. It will be up like within, I don't know, maybe even a few hours after this one. We'll see how it goes. I wanted to separate these two because they're both a little bit different. So anyways, there's that. Thanks for watching, and I will see you guys on Sunday for the live stream. Thanks. Bye-bye.